Wabbit season.
Duck season.
Wabbit season.
Duck season.
Wabbit season.
Duck season.
Wabbit season.
Wabbit season.
Duck season.
Wabbit season.
You've got your match next week. You versus Curtis Axel.
You're giving me my match with Curtis Axel.
I just did. On second thought, you're right. I don't want the match with Curtis Axel. Personally, I'd like to see the match.
All right. I'm telling you right now, you're right. I don't want the match with Curtis Axel.
I know, but I just did. I'd like to see it.
I know, but I'm not having it. I don't want the match with Curtis Axel.
Raise your voice at me.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat! You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
That new theme you hear there comes to us courtesy of Juncon. You can visit his website at JUN-CON.com. Digital music producer helping out the sound off with a new beat, and she'll be hearing going forward. So my thanks to him for that. Check out his website. This is episode 279 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com and Stitcher Radio for Father's Day, Sunday, June 16th, 2013. A very happy Father's Day to all the dads out there listening to the show, and also a very happy birthday to future WWE superstar Dylan Blade, who turns 1 year old today. I'm sure his daddy, Brian Blade, is a proud papa today. A fine Father's Day gift to the Blade family. So happy birthday, Dylan. For those of you who may be asking, wait, episode 279, what happened to 278? Well, we had a bonus episode of The Sound Off this past week. Went up late in the day on Wednesday. That was a special King of the Ring-themed edition to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the 1993 King of the Ring pay-per-view, the first King of the Ring pay-per-view, which took place 20 years ago this past Thursday. Did a whole podcast about the King of the Ring event, all the tournaments, pre- and post-pay-per-view. We highlighted all the events, talked about some of the winners, who went on to greatness, who didn't, and should the King of the Ring be brought back. It's a fun show, so if you missed it, please go back. Check out episode 278. I had a blast meeting WWE announcer Scott Stanford on Monday. It was actually in a non-wrestling capacity, although we did talk a lot about wrestling. I didn't realize that he has been a fan since he was a kid. I was not aware of that, but he just signed a brand new deal with WWE last week. As far as the rest of what we talked about, I think I'll keep that between us, but very cool dude, very down to earth, and I just wanted to say thank you to him for helping us out with a good cause, non-wrestling related, so my thanks to him for that. And also, I realized this past week in adding up numbers and whatnot and going back and checking out the statistics that the Sound Off has exceeded 1 million downloads, which I just did not realize until this past week. I don't have the exact number, but we've definitely passed a million, which is a very cool milestone. So I just wanted to take a moment here to thank everybody who has ever listened to the Sound Off, who listens consistently every single week, recommends the show to other people. I am very much indebted to all of you for that. It is a very cool thing, so I just wanted to say thank you up front here on the show. WWE Payback comes to you tonight from the Allstate Arena in Chicago, Illinois. It is the big homecoming for one CM Punk, who will be wrestling his first match since the Undertaker match at WrestleMania 29. And were it not for Punk's appearance on this show, I gotta tell you, I would not be really excited at all about Payback. That's the one match I can honestly say I am really looking forward to. That, to me, is the real main event on this show. And we might as well start with that. Punk coming back one-on-one against Chris Jericho. They had their feud last year, if you recall, over the WWE Championship. They had a WrestleMania match. They had an even better match at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So these guys are no stranger to one another. And the question is, you know, who goes over in this match? You know, it's CM Punk's first match back. He lost to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. He lost both matches against The Rock. He took a little bit of time off. Now he's coming back. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to beat the guy unless they're going to do some sort of angle where Punk is no longer a Paul Heyman guy. Whether Heyman outright turns on him, you know, I can excuse it if it's part of an angle like that. I think it's far too early to break them up. You could certainly start teasing a future breakup between them, but because it makes no sense, I'm going to go with CM Punk in this match. Plus, they are in his hometown. I know WWE likes to beat people in their hometown, but Punk got a big win in his hometown at Money in the Bank 2 years ago. If you remember that big match with John Cena, one of the best matches in company history. So I'm going with CM Punk in this match, and it would not surprise me at all if they did some sort of double turn with him and Jericho in this match. Jericho is a great babyface, but I know the guy loves working heel. He's talked about that before. Jericho is just as good as a heel as he is as a face. So I certainly wouldn't mind it if they've got a plan for Jericho going forward. If he turned on Punk, I don't know that Jericho would align with Heyman. I'm not saying that. But there could be some sort of little double turn action going on here. At the very least, I expect Punk to be cheered and Jericho to be booed. Not because people hate Jericho, but just because, you know, CM Punk in Chicago is going to get a hero's welcome. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So I'm going to go with Punk in this match. We have the WWE title on the line, John Cena, defending against Ryback, or as Daniel Bryan would call him, the Ryback. It'll be a three stages of hell match. Lumberjack, the tables match will be the second, and if necessary, wink wink, ambulance match will be the third and final deciding fall. I expect this to be a really, really good match. It's three matches in one, so it's probably going to be pretty long. Say what you want to about Cena, say what you want to about Ryback. You know, their match last month at Extreme Rules was not a bad match. It just had a shitty finish, but it wasn't a bad match. And the spotlight will be on these two guys. They've got three different types of matches that they're doing here. So they'll have the gimmicks and the smoke and mirrors and all that stuff. I think it's going to be a really good match. I don't think that it makes sense to put the title on Ryback. It would have last month. They didn't do it. And to me, they missed the boat. That's it. To put the title on Ryback now would only extend this feud, and I just don't have any interest in seeing John Cena and Ryback anymore, especially after that closing segment on Raw Monday night, which I thought was terrible. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want this to be the end of Cena-Ryback. Ryback can move on to something else. He's damaged goods. You know, you can move him into another feud with an upper card guy, a main event guy. But to me, they've killed Ryback. Ryback is dead. They could have put the title on him a while ago. They didn't. Multiple times they could have. They didn't do it. And I think John Cena wins this match. I think he should win this match. I look forward to a John Cena-Daniel Bryan, I don't know if it's going to be a feud, certainly a match, whether it's at Money in the Bank or SummerSlam, I don't care as long as we get that match. So I do not want to see John Cena lose the championship on this show. I'm going to go with him. Dolph Ziggler back in action. He'll defend the World Heavyweight title against Alberto Del Rio. Apparently the odds makers are placing bets, as they have now for the past several months. This blows my mind that there are people placing bets on WWE pay-per-view matches. I mean, how dumb can you be? But there are people doing it, and apparently Del Rio is a heavy favorite in this match. I think there's going to be a lot of very disappointed people. I don't see Dolph Ziggler losing the championship, so he better not. That's all I got to say. He better not. So I'm going to go with Dolph. Dean Ambrose defends the United States Championship against Kane. Figure Ambrose goes over in that match. No reason for Kane to win the title. The Shield, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns defend the tag team titles against the team of Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan. You know, I suppose they could do a title change here and put the titles on the unwilling partners. How many times have we seen this before, though? And I would not beat The Shield here, especially since The Shield got beat on TV this week. And it was great. We'll talk about the SmackDown ending. But I'm figuring Rollins and Reigns retain the tag team championships. Again, they just won them. No reason to take the titles off them. The Usos, at least as of a few weeks ago on TV, were seemingly being built up for a title match against The Shield, so I don't see the sense in kind of aborting that and taking the belts off them. So, Shield wins. Curtis Axel, The Miz, Wade Barrett, Intercontinental Championship three-way match, Fandango out with a concussion. Shame for him, because I figured Fandango was going over here in this match. I think it was Steve Austin on Twitter a few months ago who made the proclamation, the bold proclamation, that within 6 months, Fandango would be the Intercontinental Champion. And I have a feeling that would have happened on this pay-per-view, but it was not to be. So they put Curtis Axel in his place. Curtis Axel has perhaps the world's worst win streak going for him. But they are pushing him. They did put him with Paul Heyman. It has to mean something. I have no interest in seeing Miz as the Intercontinental Champion again. He was Intercontinental Champion before. Didn't do anything for him. Didn't do anything for the title. Why not just put the title on Axel? You may as well. And it would be a nice little nod on Father's Day for Curtis Axel to become the Intercontinental Champion when his father, no longer with us, unfortunately, is one of the greatest Intercontinental Champions of all time. So I think it would be a nice little nod to Mr. Perfect for his son to go over here. AJ Lee challenges Caitlyn for the Divas Championship. You know, I don't see this as being a lock that AJ wins the title, even though I think she will. She is my pick. But I could see them doing this first match between them. They've teased this match now for so long. This is the first match for the title that they're doing with these two ladies. Could be the first of many. I could see Caitlyn going nuts, maybe some sort of no contest or DQ, maybe where AJ wins the match but not the title. I could see that, but I'm still going to go with AJ Lee winning the championship. Caitlyn probably lets her emotions get the best of her, and AJ wins the title, and Caitlyn can chase her for the belt. So I'm going to go with AJ. And on the pre-show, which they are now calling Payback Kickoff, apparently kickoff is the new phrase for the pre-shows, Sheamus, supposedly the number two babyface in the company, by the way. I guess number three now behind Brian. Actually, probably is number four behind Brian and Orton. But at one time, anyway, the belief was Sheamus was the de facto number two babyface in the company. I never bought into that just because I like Sheamus, but I don't see him in that role. And the fact that he has been relegated to a pre-show match against Damian Sandow, I think proves that he ain't no number two babyface. But I figure Sheamus is going over in this match. Sandow actually got one over on Sheamus, I think it was last week on SmackDown, left him laying. I can't remember the last time Damian Sandow left Sheamus laying or was made to look strong. So I figure payback for him is going to be a bitch here on this show. Sheamus wins. That's the card. Looking forward to Punk and Jericho. And like I said, the main event should be a really good match. The rest just feels like your average WWE pay-per-view. Doesn't mean it can't be great, but I'm not really that excited for it. So we'll see what happens. Monday Night Raw this past week emanated from Richmond, Virginia. And for at least this week, backed by popular demand, we're going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly for Raw this week, which is actually so much easier because it's just the show is too long. So let's break this bad boy down, shall we? We'll start with the good. Why don't we start on the good side here? Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins had a match. I don't really need to say anything more than that. I could just say that, and you should know right then and there, that's a good thing. Their first singles encounter in a WWE ring. I, as a lot of other people, have seen their work previously in Ring of Honor, so we knew the kind of matches these guys can have. They did not disappoint. They gave them some time. They went out there. It was really the first time all night on this show the crowd truly came alive, as they have quite a bit recently for Daniel Bryan matches. Bryan actually won the match with a small package, which, again, is a nice little nod to his old ROH days. Again, if you missed the match, go out, find it. It's probably on YouTube somewhere. Yeah, I couldn't help but just watch this match and think, this right here, what we're looking at in that ring with Bryan and Rollins, and of course there's also Ambrose, you know, the Wyatt family on their way in. This is the future of the company that we're seeing right here. You know, I'm looking at Bryan in there with Rollins, and these are two guys who could carry the company for years going forward. You know, maybe they're not quite there yet. You know, Cena's still the top guy. He won't be the top guy forever. Rollins, I think, has the ability to be that person. Certainly, I think Ambrose and Reigns will get that chance first. But this is the future of the company right here. And if it is, I think the future is in good hands. So that's definitely a good thing. Caitlyn revealed her secret admirer, or at least was hoping her secret admirer would reveal themselves on the show. And we got Big E Langston coming out, playing the role of secret admirer, wearing quite an awesome shirt with some flowers, goes into the ring. He cuts this. Now Big E Langston, for anybody who's watched NXT, I think I talked about this last week, is actually really good. You know, in the ring, he's fine. He plays the role of big man. He's lightning fast. I mean, the guy is very agile, very quick, very fun to watch. But he's not a bad promo. He's actually pretty good. I don't think we saw that on Raw this week. This is not the Big E Langston promo that you would get if this were NXT. On NXT, he's playing a different character. Here, he was playing, you know, the fake secret admirer, who we all thought was into Caitlyn but really wasn't, so he's being all cheesy in his promo. I mean, it was kind of designed that way. It wasn't meant to be a good promo, so I don't think this did him any favors. Trust me, he's better than this. but he came out pretending to be the secret admirer. He dipped Caitlyn. It looked like he was going to go in for the kiss, and instead he just kind of let her go. She fell down. AJ came out, and AJ proceeded to cut a scathing promo on Caitlyn that just made you feel so bad for this girl. She blamed Caitlyn for abandoning her, you know, when AJ was being used by all those different men last year, from Punk to Kane to Bryan and Cena. I'm sure I'm forgetting other people. She blamed it all on her former best friend. And she called Caitlyn trash. She said she was a nobody. Caitlyn, through this entire thing, is weeping. She's crying. Now, granted, there's no tears being produced, but I wanted to comment on this here because I thought AJ and Caitlyn in this segment were great. I thought they really deserve a lot of props for you know, their performance here. And I see people ragging, not so much on AJ, because AJ cut a really great promo here that made you think, wow, what a bitch. But I saw people mocking Caitlyn, making fun of Caitlyn's performance. I don't know what these people are looking for. I have seen so many horrific acting performances on this show over the years, and this would not even rank anywhere close to being the worst. I thought Caitlyn was actually quite good, just because there were no tears physically streaming down her face. You know, some people can produce tears on the spot, some people can't. You know, but when they zoomed in on Caitlyn, you know, her eyes were all red and watery, and she looked like somebody who was just devastated. And you felt really bad for her. I didn't think she acted poorly at all. I thought she was actually quite good in this segment. I think it's easy for people to just pile on and say, oh, yeah, look, did you see that segment? Wow, Caitlyn was really bad. And I think that's really unfair because I've seen far worse. I didn't think this was really all that bad. I thought she was quite good. So I give kudos to both women here. And it also got me interested in seeing their match at the pay-per-view, which is more than I can say for most Divas matches that WWE does. I can't even remember the last time I had even a modicum of interest in a Divas match, and it's not the women's fault, it's WWE's fault, because they just don't bother booking compelling storylines for the women, because I guess they just feel, what's the point? Now, it's that whole self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, the people don't care about the Divas. Well, the reason the people don't care about the Divas is because you don't care about the Divas. Give me a reason to care, and I will care. And I think that's what they did here. So I like this segment. They were continuing it on SmackDown this week. Caitlyn was in a match with Oksana. She went nuts. I didn't think that it was a terrific segment or anything like that, but it extended the storyline here and showed that Caitlyn is in a very emotionally vulnerable, combustible state right now. Apparently she's been fined $10,000 for what she did and attacking the referee and everything. I like the story they're telling here. They're giving me a reason to care about Caitlyn and the Divas title, which I didn't think was possible, the way that they've treated it for so long. Antonio Cesaro had a match on Raw, which is amazing in and of itself, and it was actually a pretty good match, too. Not long enough to be anything special, but he and Sin Cara went in there. They had a really good match. Sin Cara, for the first time in forever, looked good, didn't get hurt. Amazing. Cesaro won. During the match, they had Zeb Coulter on commentary. Now, Jack Swagger is out. He had surgery on his hand. Apparently, he's not going to be cleared to compete until late July, maybe sometime in August. So, Zeb Coulter is just kind of hanging around. They don't really have much for him to do. He's out there on commentary. And somebody in the back must be really pissed off at T-Mobile, at their T-Mobile service, because they had Coulter on commentary, specifically naming T-Mobile and ragging them out for their shitty service, apparently. So that, I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, Coulter was on commentary. He was being very complimentary towards Antonio Cesaro, and it really gave you the impression that perhaps Antonio Cesaro is going to be brought into the Zeb Coulter fold, into the Coulter family, so to speak. I don't think that's a bad thing, and the reason I don't think that's a bad thing is because they have no faith in Cesaro. You know, as a fan, I watch television every week, and the fact that he's not on Raw, usually, he is losing most of his matches, again, before this week, it's obvious that they don't really see much in this guy, which just blows my mind. So the fact that maybe somebody there got a clue, finally, he won a match on TV, they're teasing that they may stick a manager with him, that means they're going to do something with him, and I'm all for it. You know, even though it's kind of an odd pairing to me to put Dutch Mantel with Antonio Cesaro, but that's fine, because again, if it gives him a mouthpiece, if they think, well, his promos are boring, so we'll put somebody with him to do the promos for him, fine. You know, if that's what they think is the boring aspect of him, and I don't know if that's what they mean when they think he's boring. Again, that's the rumor. WWE thinks he's boring. Well, if it's his promos and they give him a promo guy, great. Fine. Whatever it takes. But he should be on my TV every week winning matches, not relegated to NXT and main event. So I think that's good. Kane on television this week was behaving as the voice of reason. A lot of dissension between Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan on this show. Although by the end of SmackDown this week, you would just think that that never even happened. They seem to be getting along just fine. But Kane was playing the voice of reason on Raw, and I thought it was just hilarious to me, because we've seen so many different incarnations of Kane over the years. We've seen evil, sadistic, twisted Kane who didn't speak, then spoke with the little device, the little gimmick over there. We've seen Kane as the comedy figure. We've seen Kane. We've seen so many different versions of Kane. Kane, the ladies' man. Now we see Kane as the voice of reason. And the other reason I love this is because, I don't know how many of you noticed, but Kane had one of the all-time greatest quotes in the history of Raw. It was so appropriate for him to say this on Monday Night Raw. When they were backstage, he was trying to break up, you know, the dissension, the fighting between Orton and Bryan, who were arguing with one another based on what happened the previous week on TV when Orton RKO'd him. And Kane just gets between them and is, you know, trying to tell them to stop. Vicky Guerrero comes up. She mentions that they're going to get a tag team title match at the pay-per-view. And Bryan says, okay, great, me and Kane, Team Hell No, we're going to get our belts back. And Vicky says, no, no, it's not going to be you and Kane getting a tag team title match. It's going to be you and Randy Orton getting a shot at the titles at the pay-per-view. And Kane is just incredulous. He's standing there, and he just goes, none of this makes any sense. And I thought, that's the most honest thing anybody has ever said on Monday Night Raw. And it came from the mouth of Kane, of all people. I thought that was great. And lastly, the other good thing on this show, we had more Wyatt family promos. I think they showed two of them. One of them may have been the same one from last week, and then there was a different one. And that second one that they showed, which had Bray Wyatt two different times in the video saying, run, I thought that was really, really freaky stuff. I liked that so much. It was such a great promo. But it was scary, like, almost like movie scary. Like, if they did a Wyatt family movie, that's the kind of thing I would love to see. I'm like a horror movie buff anyway, so when they do those movies, there was a whole series that came out years ago. Maybe it was something in the Hills. The Hills Have Eyes, I think that's what it was. Which is just a really freaky movie series, and if you're not into horror movies, you probably won't like it, so don't watch it. But it kind of reminded me of that in a way. Like, you would find these guys in the woods somewhere, and they would just kill you. One by one, bit by bit, probably torture you first before killing you. Really freaky stuff, and I like it. I like it because it's different, because there's nobody else like them in the company right now. And as long as Bray Wyatt can back it up in the ring, and he is a good worker. Seen him on NXT. I knew he was a pretty good wrestler back when he was Husky Harris. Now you would think he's even better. Lost some weight, has a character that he's into now. And then he's got, you know, Rowan and Harper to back him up. This is going to be good. I'm looking forward to the arrival of the Wyatt family. Then we have the bad. John Cena and Ryback had a verbal confrontation at the end of Raw Monday night. All the Lumberjacks that are going to be at the pay-per-view, they came out, they surrounded the ring. Ryback was on stage wearing his hat, I guess because he's still cold. He wears that little winter hat. John Cena was in the ring. Maybe it's a skull cap, I guess. If it were a real winter hat, Ryback would have that little ball at the top, which actually would be hilarious. I almost wish he would wear something like that. So Cena's in the ring with the title, and you know, he kind of cut down on the comedy. Cena was trying to be serious. You know what? I don't know. This segment just, it didn't work for me. It didn't get me any more interested in seeing these two guys on pay-per-view. I love the dude in the crowd who was audibly screaming. As Ryback was talking, he was screaming, wah, wah, wah. During Ryback's promo, blah, blah, blah is more like it, because I just completely tuned out of it. You know, Ryback, the problem with Ryback is, it's not that Ryback can't speak. He doesn't have this inability to cut a promo or do a good interview. It's just that they script such horrible shit for him to say, it sounds completely unnatural. Like, if Ryback was in a bar fight, and he was going to cut a promo on some dude whose ass he was about to kick, he would not use any of the words that they script for him in these promos. Like, no human being walking the face of the earth would actually talk like this. He doesn't sound like a badass. He sounds like a guy playing the role of badass, and that's not what I want. I want to believe that this guy's going to go in there and kick John Cena's ass. Can you imagine if WCW tried scripting material like this for Goldberg when he was at his peak first getting over? He never would have gotten over. He would have been just another guy. And there's a reason for that. With Goldberg, actually, they had the right formula because they rarely had him speak at all. He let the action in the ring do the talking for him, and it worked. And I think if they would apply that same formula to Ryback, he would be better off for it. But like I said, they basically killed the poor dude. I tuned out. This was, you know, John Cena got really angry at one point, and I think he said a curse word. I don't know. This last segment sucked, in my opinion. It didn't do anything to get me interested in this match. It was your standard brawl. Eventually, Ryback came down, got past the Lumberjacks. Cena sent them flying out of the ring. We'll call them the Ryjacks. The Ryjacks threw them back into the ring. They were holding them back in the corner when they faded to black and went off the air. Who cares? Like I said, I think they're going to have a really good match, but it's in spite of this segment that we had on Monday. The crowd in Richmond, for the most part, on this show Monday night was dead, and it just goes to show you how much a hot crowd can really help a show. I'm not saying that if the crowd was hot, this would have been, you know, an excellent edition of Raw. I mean, it would have been the same segments, but it just felt like there was no buzz. Like, nobody cared. Bryan and Rollins got the crowd into their match. There were maybe a few other spots during the show where they came alive, but that was it. Just not a good crowd, not a good night in terms of reactions. And also, we had some product placement gone wrong here on this show. They put a bacon cheeseburger in front of heart attack victim Jerry the King Lawler on the air, in the exact spot where he keeled over all those months ago. I'm just nitpicking now, but I thought that was kind of odd, that if you're going to do product placement for Hardee's and plunk down all this fast food in front of somebody, that you do it in front of Lawler. Why not do it in front of JBL or Cole? You got three guys sitting at that desk. Why does it have to be Lawler? It's got to be a rib by somebody. And then there's the ugly, which was Triple H and the McMahons. Triple H came out at the beginning of the show to have a match with Curtis Axel. And the one thing I will say about this segment, it was different. They started a match, Vince McMahon's music played, he marched down to the ring, told them to stop the match, Curtis Axel wins, forfeit was it, or DQ, I don't know. But basically award the win to Curtis Axel, and Vince just sauntered off. So Triple H goes outside to Justin Roberts and threatens his life and says, you better restart this match. And he does. Vince comes back out, does the same thing. Triple H goes over and says, restart the match as a 60-minute Iron Man match. I almost called it a night right there. I literally almost stopped watching Raw at that moment. I was terrified that Triple H was going to be in a 60-minute Iron Man match here on this show. Vince McMahon thankfully saved all of us from that fate. He came back out. He took the ring bell, which sounded different on this show. I don't know if anybody else noticed that. Took the ring bell and went backstage. And I guess with no ring bell, we can't have a match. So that was it. So now Curtis Axel can claim that he has two more victories for a total of three wins over Triple H. Which, if they ever do actually have a match that, you know, Vince McMahon allows, I don't know, you know, three wins for Curtis Axel over Triple H is awfully lopsided. I wonder what the outcome of their actual match will be. Gee, I wonder. So it was different, yes, but between that, between all the McMahon drama that dragged out throughout the whole show, Stephanie at one point was crying, oh, please, Hunter, please, don't beat up my dad, don't beat up our kid's grandfather, please, please, Hunter. Like, oh, God, put a sock in her mouth, please. I can't believe that in 2013, I say it every week, you know, Hulk Hogan and Sting are the focal point of Impact every week. And they're still big stars. I know why TNA justifies it and thinks that that's a good thing, even though it's not. More so with Hogan, because at least Sting can still wrestle. Hogan can't do anything physical in the ring. But, you know, WWE is just as guilty of this shit, because it's 2013 and we still have McMahon family drama playing out on television with this whole roster of guys that they have. You know, why not take some of these guys and put them in an interesting storyline? You know, I'm not saying that it just has to be all wrestling matches. Why don't you come up with some compelling storylines for some of these other guys? instead of playing things out with the McMahons. I mean, Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Stephanie here in 2013 on television still doing their thing. Why? I mean, was this supposed to be funny? They had a segment later on where, and you heard some of the audio I played, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck at the beginning of the show. It was, you know, Vince who did not want Triple H to wrestle Curtis Axel, and all of a sudden Vince is like, you know what? I think I would like to see you against Curtis Axel. And Triple H is like, really? Well, you know, actually, I think you're making some sense now. I don't want the match. And Vince is like, well, I'd like to see it. And Triple H says, I don't want the match. And they just go back and forth. And then Stephanie comes in. She wants a hug. So now they're stealing Daniel Bryan and Kane's gimmick. And they have this group hug going, which, you know, Vince says, I'll hug Stephanie, not you. And Triple H is like, oh, you won't hug me? What's wrong with me? And I just wanted to put a bullet through my head because, well, what is this? Where is this going? Where is this leading to? This is not funny. Triple H, why is Triple H on TV? I thought they were saving him as a special, like, once or twice a year deal where he would come back and have a big match. Why is he on television every week? At least this week they had enough sense to have Vince McMahon actually say Curtis Axel is good. Remember last week, the week before, whatever it was, they had, I think, Vince and Stephanie both said something to the effect of, why do you want to wrestle Curtis Axel? He's so beneath you. He's not worth it. He's not worth your time. It's like, great. What a great way to build up this new Paul Heyman guy, this the future of the company here. They obviously have big plans for Curtis Axel. He's beneath you, which is true. I'm not saying that he's on the same level as Triple H, but the way they said it, they just made him look like dirt at the bottom of Triple H's boot. At least this week, Vince was saying the same thing, you know, why do you want the match? He's so beneath you. And then he very quickly interjected, kid's good, but, and then he went on. So at least they had enough sense to realize, hey, maybe we should try to put this guy over just a little bit when we talk about him and not make him look like a total jobber. So that was Raw. The good, the bad, the ugly. Wasn't a terrible show, but wasn't a fan of the Cena Ryback or the McMahon stuff. And the McMahon stuff is going to continue. We haven't seen the last of it. Maybe they have an end game here, but much like Aces and Eights, even if the end game is really great, and in the end you can look back and say, see, we had a plan, and the plan, we saw the plan to fruition. You know what, though? The week-to-week is what we have to sit through and watch on TV, and the week-to-week sucks. So, awfully hard to justify doing a storyline if it's just not that good. I only caught bits and pieces of SmackDown this week. I mentioned the Caitlyn segment a little earlier on. I caught the main event, which was a six-man tag, The Shield, against Orton, Kane, and Bryan. Really good match, as always, but in the end, Daniel Bryan locked Seth Rollins in the no-lock and got him to tap out, which officially marks the end of The Shield's undefeated streak in six-man tag team matches. They even had on the ring announcing, Lillian Garcia specifically announced that for the first time, as a group, The Shield had just lost. And they showed the crowd. People were jumping up and down. They were so happy. And Bryan was ecstatic, and he and Kane were hugging. And, I mean, it was like a big celebration at the end of SmackDown on Friday night. That's the way that the Shield streak should have ended. Although I question doing it on SmackDown. Something like that should have been done at the very least on Raw, but even on pay-per-view. They built the Shield up so much, and if they're going to ignore what happened with Cena all those weeks ago, they were still undefeated after all these months, and I just think it was sad that it happened on SmackDown, just because SmackDown does not get the same attention that even Raw does, and I think it should have been a much bigger deal, but for what it was, I thought they did a tremendous job. The fans reacted to it. The wrestlers were reacting perfectly. They made it out to be such a big deal. Like, we just beat The Shield, finally, after all these months and all these battles. And I thought it was actually a really cool moment. So, again, if you missed the end of SmackDown, I urge you to go find it. It was really cool stuff. And the fact that they gave that loss to Daniel Bryan, they allowed Daniel Bryan to be the one to end The Shield streak, I think speaks volumes about where they see him right now in his positioning in the company, and I think it's good. I think it's a great sign, if you're a fan of Daniel Bryan and his work, that they would give him that much and give him the honor of being the first person to end the Shield's undefeated streak by submission. I think that really bodes well for him going forward. Speaking of Kane, I wanted to bring this up here. There were actually two interviews this week with the Brothers of Destruction. Undertaker did an interview. I want to say it was with the Houston Chronicle. It was protected by a subscription, so I couldn't actually read the whole interview. I read excerpts of it on SE Scoops. And Undertaker was very open. They asked him, you know, about why do you keep coming back? And Undertaker said, well, honestly, I keep coming back because I love it. And I want to keep doing it as long as I can. And in a weird way, I would almost feel like I was letting Vince McMahon down if I didn't come back. So the way the interview read, unless he suffers a catastrophic new injury that prohibits him from wrestling, I think Undertaker feels like he may have a few more years left in him. I don't know that WrestleMania 30, even though it's a nice round number, will necessarily be the end for him. So he talked about his golf game, you know, in his spare time. What does he do when he's not hanging out with his family? He plays golf. Apparently he's a horrible golfer. It's very interesting insight into a guy who does not normally do interviews like that. But the other interview was with his brother, Kane. Kane did an interview with the Mobile Press Register in Alabama to promote an upcoming WWE live event. And they were asking him about the current storyline that he's involved in with Daniel Bryan. And this is a quote from Kane. This is what Kane said. He said, "What's really amazing is that after all these years, I've become the voice of reason. If you told me years ago that I would be the same person on a tag team, I would have said you were crazy, but I have been. In all seriousness, the past year, I've really enjoyed it, maybe more so than any other time in my career. It has allowed me to do things I've never done before." And I said before, it's a side of Kane that we've never seen before. His character has undergone so many different transformations, and somehow he's managed to make it work. And I've said this about Kane before. I even wrote about him in my very first column for the Layfield Report months ago. What that man has been able to do at 46 years of age, being as big physically, as big as he is, staying as injury-free as he has been able to, and being able to adapt his character as many times as he has over the past 16 years, it's nothing short of incredible. When you really stop and think about it, it's pretty amazing stuff. And that's not an easy thing to do, to take a character like his and make it interesting after 16 years. People have very short attention spans. I mean, you could call it bad booking, but there are characters now that you get tired of after a month. And somehow this guy has managed to stay relatively, and some people might disagree, but to keep his character somewhat fresh and interesting over the course of 16 years. He still goes out there. He has good matches. When he's motivated, he can be funny. He can be mean and sadistic. He can work with the younger guys like he's doing now with the Shield. I don't think he gets enough credit for what he does, and he's not a part-time player like Undertaker or Brock Lesnar or Triple H. He's still on the road full-time doing his thing because he loves doing it. And I hope that WWE just doesn't take him for granted. He's more valuable to that roster than a lot of people give him credit for. You know, right now, he's doing the Voice of Reason gimmick, and you know what? They've still got at least one more character they can let him play. And this would be entertaining as all hell, and I'm only half-joking when I say this. I think Libertarian Kane would be an amazing character to watch on TV. They say the best personas are your real persona, with the volume turned way up. And we know based on interviews that he's done how passionate that Kane is about his politics. I say let him go all the way with it. When this stuff plays itself out, 6 months, a year down the road, what do we do now with Kane? I'm just saying, it's an idea. Let him run with it. Also in the interview, one last quote. Kane said, "Daniel Bryan might be the most talented guy on the roster right now. I think he's the best technical wrestler we have, and he's also one of those guys who's been able to forge a connection with our fans. And people who are able to do that are very successful." So, nice to see Kane recognize Bryan. I'm sure they've gotten to know each other very well over the last year, hanging out, working together, doing all the publicity together. I've seen them do interviews at radio stations, and they put the video of it up on YouTube, and they're out of character. They're probably 8 o'clock in the morning sitting in a radio studio somewhere, and the banter back and forth between them is great. It's like an Abbott and Costello act. I love it. I'll be kind of sad when Team Hell No does officially kind of go to the wayside. It's why I said I hope they never break up. Like, you can stop the Team Hell No act and let them go their separate ways without having Kane turn on Bryan or Bryan turn on Kane. You know, let them have an amicable parting of the way so you can always revisit the pairing down the road if you want to, and they could still stay friends and do, you know, funny stuff every now and then. I'm hoping they don't really break them up when the time comes, because I think it would be a shame to ruin that dynamic. I caught NXT again this week from Full Sail University, another very enjoyable 45 minutes of pro wrestling. If you're not watching NXT, really missing out. Probably the easiest 45 minutes of wrestling anywhere on television. Just a nice, quick, easy show. Some good wrestling. And again, you get to watch some of the guys that eventually will make it up to the main roster and become a little more familiar with them. So when they finally do make it up there, you kind of already know who they are. You don't have to start from scratch. Sami Zayn and Antonio Cesaro had a match. So the former El Generico and Antonio Cesaro tearing it up in a WWE ring. Always nice to see. They had a really, really good match. Cesaro won with the neutralizer in the end. Just really good action, as you would expect from these two. Scott Dawson and Garrett Dillon with Sylvester Lefort as their manager. Sylvester Lefort is the former French Stallion. And very few people, I'm sure, even know about this. But Lance Storm hosted a wrestling reality show up on some Canadian network. I forgot the name of it. This was last year, the year before. I think it was The Cave was the name of the network, which I don't even think exists anymore. But it was called World of Hurt. And Sylvester Lefort is a former trainee of Lance Storm at his Storm Wrestling Academy. He would refer to himself as the French Stallion. And I think a lot of people realized then, this guy's got a great gimmick going. Hopefully somebody picks him up. WWE did. They're not calling him the French Stallion, but he's got a good name. You know, Sylvester Lefort, not a bad name. He's managing right now. So he's managing the team of Dillon and Dawson. They faced Travis Tyler and Baron Corbin, two guys I've never seen before, may never see again. Dawson and Dillon, they won the match. They won with their double-team finisher. But yeah, I look at these guys, and maybe I'm just missing something here. They kind of just remind me of a Lance Cade, Trevor Murdoch-level tag team. You know, two guys that I'm sure are talented enough, but I don't see them going past a certain level. There really is nothing about these two guys that jumps out at me. I've seen them have a few matches now, and they're just kind of dull, to be perfectly honest with you. I think of the three, Lefort, their manager, has the most potential to get over as something. He's got that character that just, it's so kind of out there and over the top that I could see WWE doing something with it. The other two, they're just, you know, they're a couple of bodies. I guess they can maybe add something to the tag team division. What? I don't know. Can't say I was overly impressed. Round one of the NXT Women's Championship Tournament continued. They had Bayley in action against Alicia Fox. I haven't seen too much of Bayley. Her character is, she comes out, she's very shy and timid, and they were describing her on commentary as kind of, you know, she's a big fan, and she, actually at the beginning of the match, she was kind of marking out over being in the ring with Alicia Fox, and Alicia Fox is like, what the hell is this? She started beating Bayley down, and that only pissed Bayley off more, and Bayley finally started fighting back. So I guess that's her character. That's her gimmick that she's got going for her. She seemed like a decent enough wrestler, but not enough for Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox beat her with an axe kick. So actually, Alicia Fox was very impressive in this match to me. Somebody emailed me about Paige. Talked about Paige in one of my NXT reviews a few weeks ago. Paige has a character that she's kind of, again, I don't quite know how to describe it. Is she emo? Is she goth? I don't know. But Paige has a very interesting character and a very strong fan following online. And this person emailed me and said, you know, I can't wait to see Paige on the main roster. But on second thought, maybe not. Maybe that's the worst thing for her, because at least on NXT, they give these women time to wrestle. And it's like, boy, is this guy right. You know, the more I think about it, the more I hate to root against people, because ultimately the goal is for them to get on TV, make more money, become a bigger star, and I hope they all do, but it's a shame because the women, at least on NXT, they actually get time to wrestle. You know, they're not having 10-minute matches, but do we really want to see these women on the main roster the way they handle the Divas division? I mean, the Divas go out there when they actually do have a match on Monday nights. It goes all of 30 seconds, maybe a minute. You know, some weeks it goes a little bit longer, but I feel like It's more rare that that happens. You know, to have a 4.5-minute Divas match is rare. It's the exception. It's not the rule. So Paige and Bayley and all these different women, you know, Emma, do we really want to see them on television? I would almost rather they stay on NXT so I can get my fill of them every week. But I don't really mean that. Hopefully they all get a shot. Emma especially, because Emma, Emma's got also a very fun gimmick going with the dancing and the trance-like theme music and all that. They've got some good women in the developmental system here. Big E Langston defended his NXT championship in the main event against Bo Dallas. Remember the contract signing I talked about where Langston impressed me, Bo Dallas did not. Sticking a microphone in Bo Dallas's hand is like his kryptonite as a worker. He's fine. They had a match. Big E Langston took most of it. Beat down Bo Dallas, and, you know, actually to the point where Bo Dallas winning the championship, which he did, I don't know that they did him any favors here. It was almost like a slip on a banana peel type of finish where, you know, Langston went for his finishing move and Dallas, in trying to fight out of it, grabbed hold of the turnbuckle, ended up exposing the metal underneath the turnbuckle and kind of rammed Big E Langston into it. And then I think he rolled him up and got the pin, and that was it. That's how Bo Dallas won the championship. Not a very convincing victory for young Bo here. And they made a big deal about it. He posed in the middle of the ring. They put the spotlight on him. He walked up the ramp. Renee Young was there to greet him. She interviewed him, and the fans were booing him the whole time. He's supposed to be this white meat, bread and butter type babyface, and these people did not like the fact that Bo Dallas beat Big E Langston for the NXT title. Could be a heel turn coming up here on this TV show for Bo Dallas in the future. Maybe the best thing for him. And in some ways, it reminds me of Rocky Maivia when he first came in and was the smiling baby face and people were just chanting, "Die, Rocky, die," and turning against him. And the best thing that ever happened for him is he got hurt, he came back, he turned heel, and he joined the Nation of Domination. And that was the best thing that ever happened to The Rock. And who knows, maybe the same could be said for Bo Dallas. The one thing I want to comment on here before we move on to Impact, the announced team for NXT this week was William Regal and Tony Dawson. William Regal is phenomenal in the role. I've said this before. He was great on this show. He was explaining, you know, why is this guy doing this hold? Why does he have him in a chin lock, for example? And he would give an explanation for why. He would give background on certain. He's so awesome in the role. And the complete and polar opposite of him is Tony Dawson. Tony Dawson is the most generic play-by-play guy you've ever heard in your life. I know of him from, you know, JBL and Michael Cole's radio show and their YouTube show and all that, and they kind of, they're always bullying him and kind of poking fun at him and stuff, and I guess he's fine in that role. As an announcer, he's no good. And maybe he'll get better over time. That's why they have him, I guess, on the developmental show. But boy, Tony Dawson, he's terrible. And at one point during the main event, William Regal was saying something, and I think Tony Dawson interrupted him. And Regal was great. Regal goes, "Do you just want me to go home and spend time with the wife? Or are you going to let me speak?" He does this thing also in the main event. I noticed it in the Langston-Bo Dallas match. There was a near fall. And his voice, like, he's almost trying to do a Jim Ross impersonation. He gets all excited. His voice kind of raises. His voice almost cracked. It felt so forced and unnatural to me. Again, these guys have to find their own voice. He's not there yet, and he's just not that good. But poor William Regal, you know, having to be saddled with this talent here. I remember hearing that Jim Ross and William Regal were doing commentary for this show many months ago. And boy, that would be a treat to get Jim Ross on commentary with William Regal every week. That'd be something special. But I guess they got to find the next play-by-play guy. Michael Cole ain't going to be around forever, so this is the way to do it. You got to throw him in there and get them some experience. So hopefully he'll get better. But yeah, he's no good. Impact Wrestling on Thursday night taped show from Duluth, Georgia. Even though they kept calling it Atlanta. I guess they're on the outskirts of Atlanta would be a more appropriate way to call it. They did announce that Destination X is coming back as a themed episode of Impact. You know, obviously since they cut back to 4 pay-per-views per year, Destination X was not one of those pay-per-views. And I would get emails from people saying, well, what are they doing with the gimmick that they just started last year, where Austin Aries had the opportunity to either cash in his X Division title and give it up for a world title shot, or would he keep the X title? They're not doing it anymore? Well, they are. It's going to be a themed episode of Impact July 18th in Louisville, Kentucky. Chris Sabin must decide whether to keep his newly won X Division championship or cash it in for a shot at Bully Ray's world title. So they've now announced the show a month out. They have time to promote it, and I think that's a good idea. it's actually fine as a television gimmick. If anything, maybe they'll pop a good rating out of it. This week's show is all about the Bound for Glory series. All 12 men have now qualified, or in the case of Jeff Hardy and Bobby Roode, been inserted, since they're previous winners. I guess Hulk Hogan just put them in there. But they've all qualified for the Bound for Glory tournament. The field now includes Jay Bradley, Hernandez, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Jeff Hardy, Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Joseph Park, Magnus, Austin Aries, Mr. Anderson, and AJ Styles. Next week on Impact is Open Fight Night, which is my least favorite gimmick they have. They were teasing a Jeff Hardy versus Bobby Roode match for next week, so I assume that will happen. Bully Ray on this show wanted Hulk Hogan to tell him why the Aces and Eights did not have any spot in the Bound for Glory series. I mentioned Mr. Anderson is qualified, but that's only because Hulk Hogan said he would leave one spot open for Aces and Eights, and all of them would have to compete on this show in a battle royal to fight over who would get the spot. Why Hulk Hogan would even give Aces and Eights one spot in the tournament, I have no idea. Hulk Hogan's life is made a living hell by Bully Ray and these people. They're coming out every week, beating people up with hammers. It's been going on now for months and months. Bully married Hulk's daughter under false pretenses. They're in the middle of this family feud right now. Hulk Hogan's an awfully forgiving guy to give them even one spot in the tournament. Bad Influence beat James Storm and Gunner. That's how they earn their shot. Spots, I should say, in the Bound for Glory series. Crimson reappeared on television. A guy that has not appeared on TV and TNA for a year suddenly reappeared on television this week. So I took that to mean, all right, I guess Crimson's back. He's going to get the big push. He's been down at Ohio Valley getting better. He comes out. He cuts a promo talking about how he went undefeated for 470 days, which he did. World's worst undefeated streak, because even though he was undefeated, it's not like they treated him like anything special. And then when it was over, they had James Storm come out on television and literally super kick him in like 30 seconds, and that's how the undefeated streak ended. So he talked about that. He talked about qualifying for the Bound for Glory series and beating Joseph Park to do so. Joe Park came out, proceeded to get the crap beaten out of him for 2 minutes by Crimson, and then Joe Park schoolboyed Crimson and got the pin. So Joseph Park is in the Bound for Glory series, and Crimson is made to look like a fool. Why even bring him back to TV if that's all you were going to do with the guy? That's a hell of a way to make your big comeback. Come out there, cut a promo, talk about how you used to be undefeated. Joe Park, the non-wrestler, comes out, beats you in 2.5 minutes. Wow. Hell of a return for Crimson on this show. Speaking of Joe Park, I do want to say one thing here. Joseph Park was doing some promotion for an upcoming TNA house show in Louisville. He was on one of the local TV stations. I put a link to the video, which Joe Park actually retweeted on his Twitter page. I put it up on my Twitter, at Solomonster. It's just really fun to watch. He goes out. He comes off as like such a lovable guy because he's not supposed to be a wrestler. He's a lawyer who happened to fall into this wrestling thing, and he comes out. And I don't know if this was, you know, they talked about this before they went out there, and the you know, the anchors are kind of in on the whole thing. But you watch this, and the anchor, especially the female anchor, she is blown away by the fact, wow, you used to be a lawyer. She goes, look at you. You look like such a sweet guy. I wanted to, like, give her a DVD of Abyss's most hardcore matches. She would be mortified if she knew this guy's background. It's just funny to see these news anchors there, you know, just kind of fawning over this former lawyer who happens now to be a professional wrestler. And Joe Park plays that character perfectly. He's so awesome as Joseph Park. I hope he never stops doing that character. But still, probably should not have won this match against Crimson. Not a good night for Crimson on this show. Mickey James, who probably has the best act going in the entire company right now, Joseph Park is now number two. She turned full-fledged heel in a segment with Velvet Sky. Velvet had an envelope to present to Mickey. Mickey thought it was a gift. Instead, it turned out to be a doctor's clearance. And Velvet Sky said, see, I'm cleared. I want my title shot. And so Mickey kicked her in her bad knee, put her in an Indian deathlock. Referees came out to break it up. Mickey was acting very much like a crazy person here, so she is officially back to Psycho Mickey. And I love it. It was that character and her feud with Trish Stratus that got me more interested in a women's wrestling match than I have ever been before. That was WrestleMania 22. So, very happy to see Psycho Mickey James back. Magnus won a four-way match with Kenny King, Rob Terry, and Matt Morgan to qualify for the Bound for Glory series. Morgan, again, came out wearing that ridiculous Hulk Hogan robe from 1980 that needs to just be burned or put in a museum and locked away in a glass case. He looks like such a goober when he walks out wearing that robe. It doesn't work. You know, it doesn't fit his character. Whatever his character is supposed to be, he should not be wearing that gold and purple robe. And he lost in this match, so apparently whatever push they may have had in mind for Matt Morgan is once again on the shelf. I've lost track of how many start and stops they've had with this guy. I maintain this. Matt Morgan may be a very nice guy. I've never met him before. He seems like a good athlete. He's a big dude. And that makes it very surprising that WWE let him go all those years ago, because the guy is a legit 7 foot tall guy. If he's not 7 feet, he's pretty close. He's got the size. And they let him go all those years ago. So TNA picked him up. How many years now has he been with TNA? The biggest thing that Matt Morgan has done is some amateur-looking insurance commercial for the company, which was a ripoff, by the way, of the Reebok Terry Tate football commercial, but we'll leave that fact aside. That's the biggest thing they've done with this guy. Now, you do have situations every now and then. Look at Mark Henry. Mark Henry signed with WWE in 1996. He got over kind of, you know, with the whole sexual chocolate gimmick, which was really just to poke fun at the guy. I mean, I don't know that they ever expected him to get over. They've done nothing with the guy for years. They would start a push as like this monster heel. He was one of Undertaker's victims at WrestleMania. He would get hurt. He has had a lot of injuries, so it's not entirely WWE's fault. He would have these start and stop pushes, and he never got over. And in 2011, it finally happened. They put him over Randy Orton. He won the world title, and he took off. The Hall of Pain gimmick was great. He was even moving the ratings needle on SmackDown when he first became champion. He was making an impact for the first time in his career. So in the case of somebody like Matt Morgan, even though it's been years and years and years, you never know when that big break may come. He may end up being a big star. What I'm saying is, in Matt Morgan, I don't see it. I see a big guy who's, you know, pretty decent with his promos, I guess, but he bores me. And the fact that WWE would let a 7 foot guy go, and he's been with TNA, and they've done nothing with him, you know what? Maybe that's a sign that he just doesn't have it. And it's time to let him go and move on. Don't push him for a few weeks and then decide, you know what, we got nothing for him, so we'll put him back on the shelf. Because you're just wasting time. You're taking up television time that you could be put towards somebody else that you're actually going to do something with. You know, it may be that they may be at that point now with Matt Morgan. Because it's amazing to me that after all these years, you know, if they were going to do something, if he was going to be a big star, he'd be a big star already. He's not getting any younger. He's not getting any better either. It's not like he's all of a sudden he's such a great in-ring performer. He hasn't exactly improved all that much in that department. I don't know where you go from here with the guy. But that robe is not helping him. That's all I can say about that. That robe is not helping him. Sting came out for a promo. He was upset that nobody from TNA came out to help him at Slammiversary. In the main event, Bully Ray, Aces and Eights came out. They were beating the crap out of Sting. Sting ended up losing that match. He can no longer ever again have a title match. And Sting was rightfully upset that nobody from the TNA locker room came out to assist him. So he talked about Aces and Eights acting like a family. And, you know, the whole you'll never ride alone thing that Aces and Eights has as their tagline. Just like the NWO was for life before guys started turning on each other, and then it wasn't for life anymore. So Sting said he was going to have to start his own family, which was probably news to his wife and kids. But he clarified and said, better yet, maybe he needs to start a new mafia. A new main event mafia. Main event mafia, for those of you not familiar, was a faction in TNA that was comprised of Kurt Angle, Sting, Kevin Nash, Booker T, and Scott Steiner. It was all main event guys going around, beating people up. They would wear suits. They look like mafioso. That was the whole point. They were the main event mafia. So the question is now, who is going to be part of Sting's new main event mafia? The word main event is in it, so obviously you can't just pluck Eric Young or Magnus or even a Samoa Joe, I don't think. I think you need to go beyond that. You got to have other people that the fans will look at as main event level guys. So does that mean Rob Van Dam, who was leaning towards coming back to TNA, will do so as part of Sting's main event mafia? RVD wouldn't surprise me. He may be one of the more likely choices. I would certainly not expect to see Scott Steiner back ever again with TNA, so you can cross him off the list. What about Kevin Nash? Kevin Nash, I don't think, would go to TNA, if he could even go to TNA, because he's got a Legends contract with WWE. I'm not aware of anybody who has ever signed a Legends deal with WWE, then signing a talent contract with TNA. I don't know if that would even be allowed. But let's take the Legends table off the Legends contract off the table for a second here. The idea that TNA would bring Kevin Nash back is laughable to me. Just, you know, if Kevin Nash can somehow manage to finagle a new deal out of Dixie Carter, especially after the way he left TNA and popped up at the Royal Rumble, then my hat's off to Kevin Nash. If he can pull that off, he truly is the smartest man in wrestling. Kevin Nash does not need to be anywhere near TNA ever again. He brings nothing to the table. I would not give it a second thought. I don't think Kevin Nash is going to be part of the main event mafia, nor should he be. Jeff Jarrett, that's another name other than RVD that I was thinking of that could very well be a possibility. Certainly Jeff Jarrett was a main event player in TNA, and for whatever reason, he's been persona non grata in that company for a long time. When they actually show Jeff Jarrett clips in that Sting video promoting his match with Bully a few weeks ago, it shocked the hell out of me, because before that, I couldn't tell you the last time they mentioned Jeff Jarrett, showed footage of Jeff Jarrett. I mean, he's still with them. You know, he's doing things in other capacities for the company. But I wonder, I mean, there's probably some heat that stemmed from the whole fiasco with him and Karen Angle and Kurt Angle, and he lied to Dixie Carter about whether or not there was something going on with him and Karen. It turned out there was. Maybe there's some lingering heat there. I don't know, but certainly they haven't put him in the Hall of Fame. They haven't mentioned him. So I don't know how likely it is they would bring him back for an on-air role like this, but it would certainly make sense, just like RVD would. So we'll see. We'll see who they have in mind. If they signed anybody big, which I doubt. Rampage Jackson, would they put him in the main event mafia? I don't even know that we're going to see Rampage Jackson on Impact going forward. You know, he was on that one show. He was on this week's show, because that was taped the same night. I'm not of the impression that he's going to be appearing on Impact every week. So, again, I don't know how likely he would be. So, we'll see. We'll see who Sting can dig out. Who Sting can dust off as part of his main event mafia. Austin Aries beat Eric Young to qualify for the Bound for Glory series. You should have seen Austin Aries walking to the ring. Just no emotion. Looked like he'd rather be anywhere else but that arena. I don't blame him. I mean, think about it. It was about a year ago, almost. He was on top of the world. He was on his way to winning his first TNA world title. And now he's stuck wrestling Eric Young while Sting talks about his new mafia and Hulk Hogan opens and closes the show every week. It's not hard to feel the pain that I'm sure Austin Aries must be feeling right now. Mr. Anderson won the Aces and Eights Battle Royal, which lasted a whopping 4 minutes, which was probably 3 minutes too long. He would just point at people, they would eliminate themselves. You know, the whole Shawn Michaels, Triple H European title match deal from Raw, or the finger poke of doom in WCW. Making a mockery of Hulk Hogan were these men. Only Doc did not seem to buy into this plan. They actually teased a babyface turn with Doc. Crowd seemed to be behind him, but in the end, he did get eliminated. So Mr. Anderson qualifies. Definite dissension in the ranks of Aces and Eights with Doc, who could very well come out of this as a big baby face, and I like it because I hope that's a signal that we are one step closer to the end of Aces and Eights, so I'm all in favor. Rampage Jackson and Kurt Angle had a very pleasant conversation backstage. Rampage asked Kurt what he meant last week when he said, "When you're ready to step into the ring," and Kurt very politely explained that, you know, for example, Kurt Angle was not going to step into the cage in Bellator for a fight with Rampage Jackson because he's not trained to be a fighter, just like Rampage would not be stepping inside a wrestling ring against Kurt Angle until he was trained to be a wrestler, and Rampage understood. He wished him good luck against AJ Styles, and that was that. Kurt Angle and AJ had a really good main event. No surprise, given who was involved. Aces and Eights interfered. Angle sent Mr. Anderson out of the ring, which allowed AJ Styles to roll up Kurt with a cradle for the pin. So, a really shitty finish to a really good match. Again, I'm not a fan of doing the same stupid finish on the same show. This was the second cradle we had after Joe Park used one on Crimson earlier, so it needs some quality control there, I think. But after the match, Ace and Ace beat down Kurt Angle. AJ left him to die. This brought out Rampage Jackson with his chain. Aces and Eights scattered, and it sure does seem like last week's stare down between Angle and Rampage was not a one-off. They are going to do a match with them at some point. And like I said, if they can get him a crash course in Wrestling 101 this summer, and it may not be possible if Bellator wants him to fight first, and I know Rampage is doing a reality show for them as well, but Bound for Glory would be a great place for that match. You know, you want Bound for Glory to be your WrestleMania? Well, that's the only logical place for a big match like that to happen. So that was Impact on Thursday night. Let's break into the mailbag. I got a lot of questions from you guys this week. You can always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to email me. David Wilson writes in, I've been hearing a lot of rumors about Hulk Hogan challenging Bully Ray for the title at Bound for Glory. Just the mere thought of that frightens me, as I was led to believe that AJ Styles is going to be the one facing Bully. So I'm hoping all of these Hogan rumors are just sick jokes. That comes from David. Hulk Hogan was teasing on Twitter that he was gearing up for one last run. Yeah, to the store, maybe. Or maybe one last run around the block. But he's seen his last run inside a wrestling ring. I never thought it was going to be Hogan and Bully at Bound for Glory. I always figured they were building AJ Styles up for that role. Now, you know, AJ hasn't exactly gotten over the way that I thought he would, and I think they thought he would. So they could always switch it to somebody else. Maybe, you know, Joe Park somehow makes it all the way to the finals of the Bound for Glory series and wins, and they finally do the big reveal at that point that Joe Park and Abyss are one and the same, and it's actually Abyss challenging Bully for the championship. Although I think that would be a pretty bad match, so I hope they don't do that. But I don't think it's Hogan and Bully at the pay-per-view. And if it is, then maybe it's Hogan-Bully in a non-title match. Bully loses the belt before. I just can't see Hogan. They can't put Hulk Hogan in a championship match. They just cannot be that dumb. They can't be. So I don't think you need to worry about that. David's second question pertains to The Shield. After they break up, which member do you see getting the big push? I know WWE is very high in all three men, but I believe Seth Rollins will be the one to stand out. Though Reigns has the look and Ambrose has the mic skills, Rollins can sell, bump, and as an in-ring worker stands out more than the other two, and his kick-ass match with Bryan on Monday night has opened a lot of eyes. I agree, Rollins is real good, but I still see Roman Reigns or Dean Ambrose making it to the top faster than Seth Rollins. You know, it's not just about the in-ring stuff. Reigns and Ambrose have a presence about them that Rollins doesn't quite have, but he's still a future world champion. I just think the other two will get that chance before he does. This comes to us from Brian. With Christian still not back because Creative is trying to find a feud for him, why can't they put him with Antonio Cesaro, who is also a man without a feud? They seem like they would have great matches, and Christian can really bring out the best in someone. Hey, no argument out of me. I'd love to see a Christian-Cesaro feud. I think that's a great idea. I also wouldn't mind seeing Christian challenging Dean Ambrose for the United States Championship. That way, at least he's got something to fight over. I think both of those ideas are great. So hopefully somebody's listening because, there's no reason Christian should be on the sidelines. He's been ready to come back for a while now. Jay writes in, what was the real-life beef between JBL and the Blue Meanie, also with Mick Foley and Ric Flair? Meanie thought JBL was being a bully to him when he had his first run with WWF in the late 90s. I don't know what JBL's side of the story would be today, but Blue Meanie claims that JBL never forgot that. And I guess the fact that Meanie complained about him and all that, and when they had that ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view in 2005, they were both part of this big-ass brawl in the ring at the end of the show, and Meanie says that JBL kind of locked in on him and made a beeline for him, and he bloodied him up pretty good. I think they're actually cordial with each other now. I don't know if I'd call them friends, but I think everything is cool with them, but I think that's basically the story there. The Foley-Flair stuff stemmed from Flair referring to Foley in his book as a glorified stuntman. But they turned it into a SummerSlam match later, and they did a program together in TNA, and they're friends now, so all's well that ends well. Jay has a second question. I seem to recall Kurt Angle before he got into pro wrestling, but after he won the gold medal in 96, appearing on ECW and despising the product, but then he ends up in WWE. Why did he commit after trashing the product? Was it money or some other factor? Angle just talked about this on the Steve Austin show, and I would recommend checking out the interview he did with Austin. It's actually really, really good. Basically, Shane Douglas invited Kurt to attend an ECW show. He did some commentary. It happened to be the same night they did a crucifixion angle with Raven and Sandman. Angle found it extremely offensive. He threatened to sue Paul Heyman if they used any footage of him on their show, and he stormed off. And he ended up getting a contract offer for a ton of money from WWE, like a 10-year deal, probably similar to the deal that they gave Mark Henry. But his agent advised him not to sign it, and he ripped it up. So fast forward to 1998. Kurt claims that he put the TV on. He saw everything Steve Austin was doing when he was hot at his peak. He wanted back in. He contacted WWE to see if he can get the same deal. And, of course, they said no. So he signed a different, less lucrative contract. And the rest is history. You know, I'm sure money had a lot to do with it, but let's be honest. I mean, there really isn't much for an amateur wrestler to do once their career is over. You know, Angle won a gold medal, and so now what? He decided to try out pro wrestling, and I think things worked out okay for him. Matthew from St. Louis, Missouri. My first question is regarding the match that Booker T and Buff Bagwell had on Raw for the WCW title. If it was so bad, why did Booker T stay in WWE and not Buff Bagwell? Well, because Bagwell stunk up the joint, and he sucked. That's why. That and the rumors were that his mother, remember Judy Bagwell? Former WCW Tag Team Champion Judy Bagwell. Judy Bagwell on a pole, which was Vince Russo's idea. Well, technically it was a forklift, but who cares? It still sucked.
He swung at his mother! How dare he!
Anyway, his mother supposedly was calling the WWE offices and pestering them about her son's travel schedule. The quickest path to unemployment is having your mother call the office to complain for you. Matthew's second question. Boy, it's the week of double questions here. Do you think St. Louis will ever host a WrestleMania? St. Louis has been a wrestling city for years. It's hosted Raw 1000, this year's Extreme Rules, last year's Royal Rumble, and other pay-per-views. Sure, if they bid on the event, I think St. Louis stands a chance. I mean, they could do it at the Edward Jones Dome, where the Rams play. I had to look that up. Seating capacity of 66,000. So I think that could work just fine. J.R. Sanders from straight out of Compton, California, writes in, what did you think about Zach Gowen's run in WWE, and do you know what led to his departure from the company? I think it was just immaturity issues. You know, he was very young when he got that big push. He was only 20 years old. And he's in there teaming with Hulk Hogan and working a pay-per-view match against Vince McMahon. He said the same thing himself in interviews. He just didn't handle things the right way. And then he fell into some drug issues. You know, WWE paid to send him to rehab many years later. He sobered up. Seems to be doing well now, so good for him. I always thought it was just a novelty act. You know, he wasn't going to last long. I can't really say I was a big fan of his. I was a big fan of the stuff he did with Brock Lesnar. That I will say. I mean, you want to talk about brutality? Any new fans who only know Brock Lesnar as the guy who shows up twice a year, go find those SmackDown segments where Brock destroys Zach Gowen at ringside right in front of his mother. You know, F5s his one good leg into the ring post a whole bunch of times, kidnaps him, and rolls this one-legged dude in a wheelchair down a flight of stairs. That's a heel. That is a heel right there. Go find that stuff. That's awesome. Pat writes in, how do you think wrestlers should handle fans who get into the ring? Should they physically force them out, attack them, or let the referees or security take care of them? They should kick their ass is what they should do. You don't know what sort of threat they pose. They need to make it very clear, I think, before the show, no fans are permitted to hop the barricade, or they do so at their own risk. I'm not saying that, you know, after you've taken them down, beat them until they're bloody. But you use whatever force is necessary to take them down and isolate the threat. And if that means you get a little stiff with them, well, then so be it. I remember years ago on Raw, it was up in Canada, this jack-off in an Oilers jersey runs into the ring during a ladder match between Eddie Guerrero and Rob Van Dam, and he pushes the ladder over while Eddie was climbing it. And Earl Hebner took him down, and Eddie took a swing at the dude. I think he missed. I would have done a lot more than that. You know, Eddie could have been hurt pretty seriously on that spot had he not landed on his feet. You know, you got to teach these morons a lesson. Either that or take him backstage and lock him in a room with Mark Henry for 5 minutes. I bet that changes his attitude real quick. It's like these clowns who streak at sporting events. We've all seen them. They strip down naked, they run onto the field, and these security guys are trying to outrun them and tackle them to the ground. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't want to go anywhere near this naked dude, let alone tackle him with his dingleberry and whatnot flopping around there. I think a nice swift kick in the nutsack will do the trick. That'll teach him a lesson he'll never forget. Shout out of the week. I want to give a shout out here to Xavier from the Netherlands, whose lovely girlfriend Marieke celebrates her birthday on Thursday. They both listen to the Sound Off every week on the way to work, and again on Monday night when they get home. He's also given back to the show in various ways, and I want to thank him for that because it does mean a lot to me. Keep sending in those questions to thesolomonster@gmail.com. I want to do a little random fact of the week here. I was watching TV the other night, and I ended up on the History Channel. I was watching this documentary called Engineering an Empire, which is about ancient Rome. Apparently it was a good 7 or 8 years old, the documentary, but it was new to me. I mean, I had never seen it before. So I see one of the people interviewed. His name is Peter Weller, and he's credited as a professor from Syracuse University. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, it can't be. There's only one Peter Weller I know, and he's an actor. So I do some searching online, and lo and behold, I come to find that it is, in fact, the same Peter Weller. RoboCop himself is on my TV screen talking ancient history. So this gets me very curious. I decide to go to the website Rate My Professors to see if he comes up. And sure enough, his name comes up, very highly rated, and it looks like most of the reviews are probably from like 2006, so they're kind of dated. I'm not even sure if he still teaches there or not. Apparently he's in the new Star Trek Into Darkness movie, so I know he's still acting. But anyway, I'm reading through some of these students' reviews of him, and they're great. So you got this one guy who says, oh, he's the best professor I ever had. This other person says, you don't attend Mr. Weller's classes because he was RoboCop. You attend for the knowledge that he imparts. Then there's the best review of the bunch. This person says, having RoboCop for a professor was bleeping awesome. The best was one day after I had his class last year, I went back to my room to watch some 24, the best show ever, and boom, there was the professor of history himself blowing up Jack Bauer. He is the man. And he says he is the man in all caps. I was laughing uproariously when I read that. But I must admit, you know, it would be pretty freaking cool to have RoboCop as your college professor. By the way, if you get a chance to check out that documentary, it's worth a watch. I had no idea, for example, that the Roman Colosseum was used for naval warfare back during ancient times, or at least that's the claim. They would actually have different ships and vessels in the Colosseum on water doing battle. So, pretty interesting stuff. And random, your random fact of the week. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. Send a friend request there. And you can subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. If you do, you would have gotten that bonus show from last week, episode 278, the special King of the Ring themed edition. So if you missed it, go back and check that out. Let me know what you think. And we'll be back here next weekend for episode 280 of The Sound Off on SEScoops.com and Stitcher Radio. Enjoy Payback, those of you tuning into the pay-per-view this weekend. And until next time, be well, stay safe. We will see you right back here, as always, next week.
You've been listening to The Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Daniel Bryan's been unstoppable!
The bad.
Raw is now 3 hours every Monday at 8.
And the ugly.
Hello. Why does Jerry Lawler insist on telling us that we are just getting started? The fuck have I been watching for the past 2 hours?
Well, mostly the good.
I don't want to K-fab you.
You're going to K-fab me?
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on SEScoops.com, TheSolomonster.com, and Stitcher Radio, The Solomonster Sounds Off.